Welcome back. For the second time in 24 hours, we'll be going to beautiful, wonderful Prague. John Still is here. Andy Bennett is at Place Belle, and we'll be talking to Andy ahead of the Montreal-Boston PWHL playoff game tonight at Place Belle in about an hour. Joey Elias, meantime, is sitting in for Andy. Thank you, Joey, who will be performing on stage. Everything he has learned, if anything, over the last several hours, he is going to talk about on stage tonight at Comedy Nest. One show tonight, two shows tomorrow, two shows Saturday night, one of the best in the country, Mr. Joey Elias. And friends, go to ComedyNest.com for tickets.
Here's Bluger. Bluger pulls up, back to the line, to Dora! Joshua for Garland, speeding in, pumps, scores!
How about that if you went to bed too early? Tying and winning goals by the Canucks last night at home against Edmonton 39 seconds apart. Edmonton Oilers, the team that Mystic Mike picked to win the Stanley Cup. How you doing?
Oh, boy. The same Edmonton Oilers that have lost game one in eight of their last nine playoff series. So this is just par for the course for the Oilers. They start slow, they finish strong. It's like game one to the Oilers is like game seven to the Leafs. Right? They have a hard time winning them. So yeah, I'm not going to waver on my Oiler pick just yet, although you might have gone to bed early. I happened to wake up early because of the jet lag and everything else. I woke up at like 5 in the morning, flipped it on, saw that it was 4-2, figured, oh, I'll watch the Oilers cruise to victory in game one. And boy, was I ever surprised as they went three quick ones in the third period. But more than just a three-goal comeback, it was how little Edmonton did in the last 25 minutes of that game. They went 22 minutes without a shot on net, which is so surprising. And maybe we thought that the Oiler offense would be able to bother the Canuck defense. And with what Edmonton have, 18 shots in the game, Maybe we should think that the pace of the Nashville Canucks series might be closer to the pace of the Oilers Canucks series than we thought.
First of all, I didn't go to bed. I was very, very tempted. It was 4-1, and I wanted to.
Begging to go to bed at the end of the second. You're like, yeah, it's over.
I absolutely wanted to, Mike, and I figured 4-1. Let me see who scores the next goal. And if it was 5-1, I would have turned it off. But a lot of people did go to bed. Mitch Gallo went to bed even after it was 4-2. But, you know, and I know it's different in playoff time and not projecting a Canucks win or anything, but you can't help but be impressed by the way they came back on home ice and took advantage of a, you know, it's the one concern if you're an Oilers fan. Okay, the deeper into this playoff run we go, can Stuart Skinner hold up? Last night he didn't.
No. I mean, and there are no other real options, right? They got Pickard at the back of it, Campbell the third. Like, it's Skinner or bust. And the Oilers generally play well enough and generally score enough that he doesn't have to be, you know, Bobrovsky grade or Shesterkin grade. He just got to be kind of three goals, like Georgiev good, right? Because the offense is so good. But he wasn't that. I mean, you think about the Lindholm goal at the end of the second. He put it in by himself with a stick from behind the net. That's no good. Even the Miller-Sidney Crosby chop tip from the side of the net, yeah, it's a good play, but it's one you maybe could mix a save in. Zadorov slapper, a little bit of traffic, but on the bench, I'm expecting, not just hoping, but expecting my goalie to save that. And even on the Connor Garland winner, where I do quite enjoy that little pump fake, whether you take it wide like Jason Spezza used to love to do, or you slip it 5-hole, it's a slick little move. But again, first of all, the puck was going to miss the net. It actually hit the pad of Skinner, ricocheted into the net. But, you know, just for three or four goals that, of course he wants them back, but like he should have had them back. Like, they're not good. So that was an issue. Also, Leon Draisaitl playing 17 minutes because of equipment and cramping. So if we're to take that at his word, the equipment thing should never really happen. Swapping out blades takes 2 seconds. Cramping is unusual because it's not like Leon's been taxed lately. He's had a week off. He's in good shape. He plays a ton every game. That one's unusual as well. But maybe most importantly, Mitch, is that the Canucks, through the neutral zone, slowed down Connor McDavid. And they were kind of not quite shadowing him like he's 10 years old, but they were curling and going with him sort of abandoning their neutral zone structure to have a guy skating and discouraging him from even getting the puck. And if he got it, he wouldn't be going full speed. And it worked really well. Not even a shot on net for Connor McDavid. Yes, he got a point, but by his very high standards, it was a subpar game for him. And if you can saw off McDavid's line, not take too many penalties, which they didn't really help themselves with that. Too many men early, you thought, oh boy. But not take too many penalties, you'll give yourself a chance against Edmonton. And the fact that Vancouver won a game where their goalie, Shelofs, wasn't particularly sharp either, is an added bonus. They would be thinking they stole one last night because they did.
I thought all year we're a good defending team, and I think when we have something to fall back if things don't go our way, and that's our foundation.
The man who will win the Jack Adams Award as the Coach of the Year, yeah. Rick Tocchet of the Canucks, John.
Mike, I just kind of want to go further in on that. Like, I have been relatively dismissive of this team almost the entire year. The Canucks, not the Oilers. I'm not crazy, but the Canucks.
Well,
I mean, you know, I flirt with the line, yeah. But like you do look at some of the names on paper, Mike, and you do think, you know, how are they really doing this? And then, you know, it's a terrific tip in by JT Miller, but the guys who are doing it is Zadorov and Garland, who, you know, acquired midway through the year. And last year they were just trying to get anyone to take Connor Garland. All this kind of to say, this preamble, like, how exactly has Rick Tocchet done this, especially with Pettersson being a total no-show in the postseason?
So, yeah, Connor Garland also asked for a trade this year. And here he is now kind of playing a prominent role. So it's all kind of worked out well. And I think Rick Tocchet explained it really pretty succinctly, is that the foundation of the Canucks' success is not in Pettersson and Miller and Hughes and Demko. Even those guys are all superstars. That's not why they're winning. That's the last third of the season, they were a top three defensive team in the NHL by just about every metric, including goals against, but shots and chances and expected goals and all that other stuff. Like, they were one of the best defensive teams. And you don't have to be super talented, because you think of talent, you think of puck skills. I guess playing defense is a talent. Not everyone has it. And they have a whole bunch of players on their team, including their good ones, including the ones who aren't scoring in Pettersson, that can still play defense. And when you talk about an element of your game, a baseline, executable every night part of your game that you can rely on, that's defense. Because even if the legs aren't there, or the opponent's really good, or you don't have the puck, or no confidence, or you're hurt, or whatever, playing defense is mostly brains, hockey IQ, and sacrifice, like a willingness to work. And they have those things they have throughout their lineup. And then, you know, generally they've coupled it with really good goaltending in Demko, and they have something that will keep them in every game. And if they're scoring great, then they win 5-3. If they're not scoring great, then they can win 3-2. It's a real luxury to have, but I think it goes to show the value of defensive structure, foundational, a game, and the idea that, like, you know, Dakota Joshua, Teddy Bluger, Connor Garland, Mikheyev, these are not superstar skilled players, but they're players who are willing to do what it takes to play defense. And I think that's the lesson. If I'm Montreal and I'm watching Vancouver, I'm like, we can get our guys to play like that, right? Like, we can get our guys to defend something like that and be much better in that regard. And Rick Tocchet has got his guys to buy in. He got them to understand what they're doing. He's applied a system they're good at, and it's making life difficult for their opponents. And I was with you. I was sort of like, yeah, PDO Bender, great shooting, great goaltending early. They're not that good. They're not that sustainable. But that last third of the season sort of swung me to thinking, you know what, they've flipped the script. In fact, their offense dried up. Their power play became no good. But their goaltending and their defense allowed them to stay first in the division, and that's what's gotten them the second round. That's what's going to keep them going against Edmonton.
I don't think you can beat the Oilers without elite goaltending, so we'll see how that develops. I know there's a chance that Demko can get in the series. We'll see, because I think that's the element that could have helped them stage an upset, is if Demko was healthy and stealing a couple
now,
games.
You'd think that, Mitch, but the other part of that coin is, like, you know, you think Edmonton is going to get pretty good goaltending, right? Like, your goaltending will be worse than theirs. What if they're both just kind of pedestrian? Like, maybe Vancouver needs it a bit more, but with that structure, maybe they don't, because you know, Edmonton maybe not give up as many chances, but they don't play always with the same kind of structure. And I tell you what, Darnell Nurse, Cody Ceci, tough game for those two. And that's going to be something that they need to sort out, because those guys play a lot of minutes. And if they're getting chewed up in those minutes, that's trouble.
But there's a guy there, and I get a lot of people don't stay up late and watch teams on the West Coast. And the casual fan, they might remember him from the Rangers. We saw him at the beginning of the year of his career. But JT Miller is a brilliant player. He's a leader. He's smart. He scores. He playmakes. He's everything you want as a veteran leading your team.
He is, but I think you said a key word there, veteran, because early in his career, he had sort of the raw tools you're seeing, you know, the powerful skating, the good hands, the big shot, but he was like emotionally volatile on himself, on the officials, on the coaches, on his teammates. He was sort of, you know, disagreeable a lot, and it kind of hurt his game, maybe hurt his relationships on a team, and he's sort of grown out of that, and maybe with the help of Rick Tocchet, sort of matured and found the right balance of what drives him and makes him great, but what also can help his teammates and his team to be really good. And the two things I like about JT Miller a lot, one is he has that sort of attitude, Mitch. Well, he's not the best player in that series. He carries himself like he's the best player. And he's got enough gumption to, like, think that I can go challenge Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl head-to-head, and for seven games, I don't have to take a backseat to anyone. Like, I love that in a player, even a good one, because a lot of guys are, you know, they do get a bit deferential. McDavid's McDavid. You know, you want to play him hard, but you're sort of on your heels because you think he's so good. JT Miller's on his toes. He's like, no, I'm as good as he is. And no worry about that. And the other thing about JT Miller is that he is an emotional catalyst. So he's got his own game and his own attitude figured out, but he also really helps the team with his physical play, with his verbal interactions with his own team and the other on the ice. Like, he brings his guys into it and has other guys want to buy in and believe what he is feeding himself. And that all filters throughout the lineup, makes everyone better. Yeah, he's a really, really good, really important player for Vancouver.
Okay, I know you were asleep when this happened. What did you make of the Pasternak-Kachuk scrap when the game was out of control?
So, Mitch, you know I'm well on the record about my thoughts on fighting and the importance of it and the role and all the rest of it. I don't think it's that important. I loved it. Like, I absolutely loved it. Now, of course, you know, you hold your breath and hope nobody gets hurt, but like David Pasternak, who clearly doesn't do this, going to the bench and asking or telling his coach, I'm going to go fight Matthew Tkachuk. And you could see Jim Montgomery's reaction, like, are you sure?
Yeah, there was a bit of a crooked smile, you know, there.
Yeah, like, do I want this? Like, and then he's like, you want this? Okay, go get him then. And for a team, like, what pasta fighting doesn't do anything to Florida. Like, they're going to go after him. It doesn't do anything. But it does something for Boston. It's a rallying point. It's galvanizing. It lets the rest of the team know that every single person in that room, including the guy who would never, ever be questioned for not being involved physically because he's so good, that they're all in it together. His quotes after the game, I'm not afraid of Matthew Tkachuk. I can take a punch. I can give a punch. I'm not going anywhere. I love these guys in this room. I'll fight for them any day. Like, that's a guy putting his own personal health on the line for his team. And the team would respond and recognize that. It was awesome. Fantastic stuff. But so that fight was great. But in a bigger picture, Mitch, we've seen this for a couple of years now for Florida. They are an equal opportunity greaseball team, right? Like, whether they are winning, anytime they're in a game that gets the goal differentials three or more, the game gets greasy. And whether they're winning or losing, right? It's not just they're in a bad mood. They can be in good mood. And once the game's out of reach, they get chippy. They want scrums. They want tussles. They want tens. They want fights. They want to make you feel a little bit uncomfortable. Now, it's the playoffs. The Bruins are going to be scared of Florida. But what Florida is trying to do is establish like an emotional level of engagement and sort of edginess to the game, because they think they're more comfortable in that environment than their opposition. And what Boston was doing, including Pasternak, was saying, we're not going to win this game, scoreboard, but we're not going to lose it in the alley. And I think that was an important step, because Florida, they like to bully you. That's what's part of what they do. And I think Boston with all the chippiness at the end of the game, including Pastas, was them saying, you can't bully us. We're right here. We're going to stand up and be every bit as engaged as you are at it. So it should set up for a great night tomorrow night. They play game three, but I totally get what Boston is doing because Florida will try to run you off the scoreboard and run you out of the rink physically at the same time.
Who should the next coach of the Leafs be?
So it's a great, it's a very good question. And there's no, I don't really know the answer. It sort of depends on the vision that they have for the team, right? Like, are they going to play sort of an offensive style? Are they going to change the top four forwards? Are they going to round out their roster? Like, some parts you think you need to sort of match the coach to the vision of the organization. And I'm not sure if the vision of the organization is changing this summer, but I would think, I'm reading a lot, interestingly enough, about Joel Quenneville. And you wonder if he wants to coach, what his path back to the NHL was, the Leaf or somebody else, like where that goes. Cause he's sort of, I've seen him do a few media things, sort of talking and rehabilitating his image a little bit. You wonder if someone wants to take a run at him, but obviously Craig Berube feels like he's the clubhouse favorite. I think part of the reason why Craig Berube is not in Ottawa is because he might have been holding out for Toronto and Sheldon Keefe to potentially lose his job. I think Todd McLellan would be really, really good in Toronto. Discipline, structured, hard, defensive. That's what Toronto needs. And one other guy that sort of doesn't get tossed around despite being a pretty good coach with a pretty good record, who I think would be good, is Jay Woodcroft. I know he was fired in Edmonton, and Edmonton went on a tear without him. But the way Edmonton was losing early, it wasn't really the coach's responsibility. He's always put together really dominant analytical teams, plus with the talent, sort of like you'd have in Edmonton. I think he could be a really nice fit. But it feels like, I don't know. I don't know how fast you can do Craig Berube, but it would not surprise anyone what Berube is he named on Monday or something like that after the weekend. But there's lots of good candidates out there. I think this team, they need, like, everyone says, like, you know, accountability and a firm hand in Toronto, but I think they also need some teaching, like some habit teaching and some actual coaching, not just motivating. And so you got to make sure you bring in some of that as well.
Mike, who had the more difficult, blowing lead in game one night, Dallas or the Edmonton Oilers?
You know, well, I would say Dallas because I think Dallas is in a tougher series than Edmonton. Like, Edmonton can survive a lost game and still have a great chance to win the series. Having said that, Dallas lost their first two at home against Vegas and found a way to come back and win. But, you know, I think the Stars are an underdog against Colorado. I think Colorado Avalanche are the best team at home in the Western Conference. And what Dallas is supposed to be great at is defending, right? Defending their lead and having good goaltending. And so that one will sting for them. But what Dallas will need to do is look at that first game and recognize what worked and what did not work. And what did not work was when they tried to play power on power, when they put Hintz and Robertson and Heiskanen and Harley up against McKinnon's line, they got crushed, absolutely crushed at 5-on-5. But when they put Chris Tanev out against Nate McKinnon, and this Chris Tanev is such a cool story, like how well he's playing right now, both on the scoreboard and otherwise, Dallas was able to control the play against McKinnon in his minutes. So I wonder if Dallas tonight goes away from power on power, doesn't play Heiskanen and Harley, but plays Tanev up against McKinnon a little bit more often to see if he can even out the playing field. Because if you can't stop McKinnon, you're not stopping Colorado. He's so great that he alone can dictate the Avalanche success or failure. When he's rolling, they win because he gets so many chances, so many goals, so many points. If you can slow him down, you give yourself a great chance.
Always a treat chatting, Mike. Thank you. World Hockey Championship in Prague, Saturday morning, 6 o'clock. Canada and Great Britain. And I think around here there might be more interest in Team USA after the boys told me about the line of Brady Tkachuk, Trevor Zegras, and Cole Caulfield.
Yeah.
Looking forward to that.
UST is stacked. They're going to be a fun team to watch. And, yes, we got Slavkovsky over here. Yeah, it'll be fun. 6 a.m., Mitch, I'm counting on you up and early texting me your thoughts on the game live so I know you're watching.
Yeah. You know what? Maybe I'll bounce back and forth from the old firm in that game. Maybe I'll text you, Mike. I don't know.
I've just been challenged. Thank you. Have a great weekend. We'll talk
Tuesday.
Have
a great weekend, guys.
Bye-bye. You have to leave in a hurry because we outlived our time slot with Mike.
Well,
we're,
I mean, it's 11.
We're eating into Toronto time.
It's 11 o'clock here.
No, but we're he's.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah, I forgot.
He's got the other.
He's
got
to go tell them why Craig Berube is going to be hired on Monday.
Aaron Ward standing by. Interesting development ahead of Game 3 tonight in Carolina between the Hurricanes and the Rangers. We'll get to that and much more. Plus tickets to see the Doobie Brothers on October the 12th. Don't go anywhere.